Sam Plant on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Brett Minier is live in person with me today. The award-winning journalist joins me to look at a couple of the news stories of the day. Today's U.S. presidential election and more. We'll also look at news. If you follow him as I do on Twitter, at Brett Minier, you'll know he's got a keen eye to news stories, how they break, and the context of it all. In 2011, he won the Jack Webster Award for Best Radio News Reporting for the Whistler Sled Dog Killings. He went on to work briefly at CTV News in Victoria. We'll talk about that, too, and what it's like in the world of journalism today. Brett Minier is a graduate of BCIT's broadcast program and was a reporter with CHNL and CKJM in Kamloops until joining CKNW in 2008. He won the Webster Award at CKNW in 2011, the same year he began his short-lived time at CTV that ended early this year. You see him regularly on a, you see him on occasion on Shaw TV's That's What You Think. He's nearly a regular there. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Brett Minier. Mr. Minier, good morning.
Well, good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. I understand you came all the way from Ladner.
Ladner. Yeah, that's home these days. It's where I went to high school and where I grew up, and it's a good little place.
Yeah.
It's just hard to get anywhere.
Especially with today's weather. It's awful out there.
Yeah. But, it's hard to get anywhere from out there.
How do I describe you? Are you a freelancer?
At the moment, I guess you could describe me as a freelancer. I've written the odd article or two, but beyond that, I guess you could say I'm currently seeking my next adventure.
Yeah. And in terms of what you're looking for, is that something, I mean, can you share that with us?
At the moment, I'm looking at going to, here's the thing, I would like to continue in journalism, but there's a lot of sort of circumstances that have popped up within the last year and whatnot that, my options are somewhat limited, I think, in Vancouver. There's a lot of people that are in gigs right now that aren't going anywhere anytime soon, and, it is what it is. It's also a little it's harder now to think about a future in journalism, the model that a lot of companies have. There's not a lot of people sticking with it for very long, and the ones who are have sort of attained the highest levels, right? They're your Chris Galises and your big anchors and whatnot. Those guys can make a go of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a grunt, it's hard because the job, there's an oversupply of labor, I think, and they can hire cheap, and they do. And you will only last for so long, and then you have to think about the rest of your life and what you're going to do to build a career. And there's a lot of communications companies that love to snatch up journalists when they sort of come to the end of their shelf life.
Yeah, well, but certainly your shelf life isn't up yet, right?
Well, I feel like as a journalist at the moment, I got to admit, you've caught me at a grim time,
yeah.
Right? The future is kind of a big unknown for me right now. I wake up every day and I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the end or not. I can imagine you'll want to get into it, but I can tell you getting let go from two jobs in 1 year, whether there's something behind it or not, it's a stain, and it's hard to get in the door in some places, right? So I'm sort of looking at what my options are right now, and a lot of those options look like they're in the communications business. So but
Ooh.
It's going to be a matter of the right fit for me, because
yeah.
There's some things I won't do, right?
Right. Now, we'll get into your career thus far.
Yeah.
But, I want to talk about sort of a couple news stories that are in the in the news today, I guess. I mean, even though you're not a practicing journalist at the
right.
moment, I mean, you're still tuned in. I mean, I follow you on Twitter.
Absolutely. And, throughout the course of the day, former colleagues, people who are working, at stations now that I've known throughout my career, whatever, I talk to them throughout the day, text
yeah.
messaging, Twitter, that kind of thing. We all share thoughts and ideas, and there's been the odd story or two that's popped up in the news, in the last couple of months that I've fed them and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm out, but I'm not out.
Yeah, like the SkyTrain bombing story, or whatever we're supposed to call it. Yeah. The explosives that have been found at the on the SkyTrain tracks. I mean, that's something that you would be covering, right?
If you're, absolutely. Yeah. That would be, you know, one of those situations where you're in the newsroom and, you know, it always starts with, you know, first word comes on Twitter or through phone calls to the newsroom. People will be saying, like, hey, the train has stopped. I don't know why we're moving.
And, yeah.
You know, you start looking into it, and it may require a trip out to to wherever it's happening, or you may be able to do it by phone, but definitely that would be something that...
The latest one that happened last night was at, I guess, the New Westminster station.
Yeah.
A suspicious package was found.
The pipe.
Yeah.
With the dowel in it.
And that didn't break on Twitter till just about 10:30, 11 last
right.
night. And apparently the emergency people were there... I guess an hour before.
Mm-hmm.
What happened there? Did you think that we weren't being told?
Why
weren't
we being told?
Yeah.
I think with my experiences being with these situations is that police won't actively try to hide something from you, but they won't necessarily go and announce it either. The longer that they can go out there without having to wake up or bring in from their dinner with their family, their communications person, or whatever,
yeah.
the longer they'll go. And occasionally things do go by unreported. And that's sort of the risk, I think, that some newsrooms run when they don't, you know, maintain bureaus, say, out in the valley, that kind of thing, or they kind of run on a skeleton crew, is that it all kind of falls to that one person then to be monitoring everything that's happening all over the Lower Mainland in addition to the regular duties. And sometimes things slip through the cracks and you can go a while before you find out about things.
Have you been in a situation where public safety was involved and have not reported something because you were asked to, because it was a risk to the public, they didn't want to whip up some hysteria or something like that?
Off the top of my head, I can't
think
of anything. I know there's been situations where we've had conversations in the newsroom about kind of the type of language that you want to use so as not to cause panic or alarm, or, you know, how far are we going too far? Is this sensationalizing something, or, you know, what do you do, or how do you feel about this? Just a straight answer, no, I've never been... I've never been asked to hold something back out of a public safety concern or whatever.
What about the Amanda Todd story? I mean, there's some parts of that story that we still don't know today. I mean,
exactly.
Some weeks afterwards.
Yeah.
Is that the sort of the public service part of being a journalist, that you don't report on some things? Like, I mean, the method to which she committed suicide, I mean, that's not been revealed or anything like that.
Yeah. The part of that, and it's actually interesting that you sort of mention that, because we were sort of having a bit of an online debate, myself and a couple of other journalists yesterday, and people who are not in the profession, about suicides and how they're not reported. And it's a policy that has been in place for a very long time that the media has, and a lot of journalists, if you were to ask them why. They will give you a generic answer that it's, to prevent copycats,
mm-hmm.
but the policy actually does come out of studies that were done by the Canadian Psychiatric, the Association or something like that. They actually did studies that were able to show a cause, you know, sort of a cause and effect with regard to copycats and whatnot. So it's a general policy not to report on suicides. Now, personally, I think that there's a middle ground that can be staked out, whereby you're able to cover these things while still sort of adhering to these guidelines that the psychiatric, that psychologists say that you should be with, you know, not revealing the method in which they killed themselves, not to glorify, you know, or show pictures or sensationalize. I think there's a lot of things about the Amanda Todd case where I think you could argue there was sensationalism that happened, but I don't think it was intentional. I think it's everybody gets on the bullying train and then they decide to go with that. What I found interesting about Amanda Todd's case is that there's this whole other... this whole other world with regard to these sort of hacker child exploitation artists that never really got covered that much, and that's where, you know, the hacker group Anonymous gets involved and whatnot, in the lengths that they went to with Anonymous New Jersey in exposing some of these guys that were allegedly involved with the Amanda Todd case. Some of the stuff that came out in the Anonymous document dump on these guys that were linked to Amanda Todd was pretty damning. And outside of a couple of reports that the Vancouver Sun did some very good work on this, it didn't really, once people in the media had kind of latched onto a narrative of bullying and kind of turning her into a martyr, they didn't really pursue it any further. It kind of, to me, felt like they were grasping the low-hanging fruit. She was a young woman who had, problems. Obviously, there's a mental illness component to the story, as there is with a lot of, with all suicides. There's a straight-up mental illness angle there as well, and a lot of sort of what she became susceptible to looks like it came as a result of, sexual exploitation online. And,
If a cursory look at it, or just anybody who doesn't follow the news very much or the story, would think that when the word bullying is used, it's in the school context with her and her classmates. But, you just told us now something about that really, we haven't.
There's this whole world of these guys that exploit young girls online. Yeah. They get them to take their clothes off for the camera, and then they essentially blackmail them.
Yeah.
And then they own them. And these guys, they have their own little awards and everything on YouTube. And there's these YouTube channels that YouTube tries to keep on top of to close these guys down, where they give updates over YouTube with a robotic voice. They kind of make their videos a lot like Anonymous does. Mm-hmm. They use a generic animation of a news anchor sitting at a desk and a computerized voice, and they literally give out targets, like online handles of girls that these guys are going to target, and then, and then they do, and she unfortunately found herself the victim of some of these guys, and they bugged her, and then they essentially blackmailed her and put her stuff out there, and then her peers, unfortunately, that's where the bullying comes in, right?
Yeah.
But, she was a victim of sexual exploitation as well as bullying.
Yeah.
And, bullying, I guess in this province, it's where a lot of minds sort of went first, and then they didn't really go much further than that in their coverage. But like I said, the Sun, there was some pretty good stuff in the Sun that tracked down, some of these online sort of predators.
Yeah, digressing dramatically here.
Yeah,
the American election. That's something that you're following, obviously.
Yes, I'm half American. So,
oh, is that right?
Yeah. So, my dad is he was born and raised in Cincinnati, Ohio. He's very much a Tea Party Republican. Very much, he's quite opposite of myself, to put it out there. Yeah. I guess to disclose it. We're both passionate about politics, but I guess you could say at opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yeah. Did you do something special on election night? Will you be doing anything tonight?
No, that's the thing. I'll be sitting at home watching.
Yeah.
And trying to keep my tweets to keep from tweeting absolutely everything.
Yeah. In terms of, you mentioned the Sun's work on the Amanda Todd story.
Yeah.
Let's move to, say, the state of journalism in this part of the world. The Websters were last week. And I was reading some of the nominees and the print nominees and looking at some of the work that was nominated. There's some pretty good people out there. Do you think that that's from my observation, from my perspective, I guess, as a viewer, as a reader, do you think that's accurate?
Let me tell you, I always left the Websters since I started going as a student. BCIT, offers a deal for their students of broadcast journalism. You can go for, half price, and then usually in the case when I went for the first two times, the foundation actually kicked back the rest of the money. So we ended up going for for free, thanks to the foundation, and it's wonderful for mm-hmm. inspiring you. You get completely inspired, and it just drove me. Every time I would go, I was like, you know, I think with the right story, I could, yeah. I could be up on that stage, and it and you wanted to, and it's there is a lot of good work that's out there. The problem is it's getting harder and harder to do that kind of good work. There's fewer people to do it, and not as much time to do it. It often now a lot of these big endeavors, especially in broadcast, are kind of efforts that a reporter is having to take on their own and put in a lot of their own time to do it. That was my experience in radio anyways. In television, you've got a bit more leeway, but I mean, it's the Websters. I've got an affinity for them. For the foundation and what they do.
I mean, if you grow up in this part of the world and you watch the news on TV or you listen to the news on the radio or talk, you read the papers. I mean, that's the biggest deal when it comes to, I guess, the validation part for people in your business, right?
Yeah, within the industry, we kind of think of it as like the Oscars of journalism. Yeah. That's sort of how I always thought of it. There isn't really any higher honor, I guess, other than, I mean, it's the accolades from your peers, but there's also a degree of public accolade that comes with it, and it's also the legacy of Jack Webster. He's a guy that so many of us listen to growing up, and if you wanted to be in the business, you often aspired to be a guy like Jack Webster, or, you know, you wanted to have that job, you wanted to be that guy, or you just outright admired what he did.
Yeah, were there other people other than Webster that you grew up listening to, watching, that you liked?
Oh, I was kind of a forced NW listener growing up, right? It was on in the car when on trips to school or whatever. And to tell you the truth, the guy I remember the most from trips to school in the morning was Neil McRae.
Exactly. Yeah.
I can remember being driven to school one day. I was in high school, but it was like junior high, so I wasn't driving yet. I was still getting rides to class. And hearing McRae having to apologize for some kind of using some form of profanity on the air the day previous, and I just remember it stuck in my mind as, this is very entertaining.
Yeah.
Maybe that says something, though, that I was 13 years old and it appealed to my 13-year-old mind. But I remember a lot of mornings and listening sort of to the morning comment by Rafe Mayer. And some of those grillings, you know, when I was younger, I was not into politics. But I tell you, you know, listening to that station growing up, you could get into politics. You could get into it because these guys just had a command of the microphone and a way of doing it, a way of bringing out, speaking truth to power, as the cliche is, and. Busting bastards, as I sort of tell myself.
Yeah. Well, so what was it like then to listen to it, to grow up listening to it and admire it as you did? I mean, I did as well. And then to get to work there?
I was sort of two minds on it. In one part, when I interned at CKNW as a BCIT student, many of these personalities were still there, and the newsroom was a place that you didn't get near as an intern. I think I only spoke to one actual newsie on one occasion when I was an intern at NW. I had, as an intern, come across the story of something called the Naomi Project, and that's where they were going to be doing these heroin trials,
right,
whereby, you know, you come in and you are given access to heroin and whatnot, as for sort of the worst of the worst. They were going to be starting this up in Vancouver, and it's a long story how I got a hold of this story, but I did as a student, and so we were going to do it on Jennifer Mather's show. But at that time there existed this competition between the talk department and the news department. They didn't work together like they do now, and we kept it a secret this big scoop that we had over on the talk side. We kept it from the news department until the day we were going to break it, and then 5 minutes before we went to air, I was told, go down there with all your research to the news side and give this to somebody, and I gave it to Ivani Moore, and I handed it off, and then that was the extent of my involvement there. You didn't get near there as a student. Now, you come in as a student, and they might just work you into the schedule and have you start coming in doing news shifts. You're cheap labor, right? And so it's kind of and when I actually got hired there, it was interesting. I got headhunted from Kamloops. I used to send them before I got hired in Kamloops. I sent them demo after demo, resume after resume. I didn't even get confirmation that they'd even received it. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple of really good stories in Kamloops, and they started calling. They obviously still had all my stuff on file, even though they'd never acknowledged it. Mm-hmm. And they started calling, and every time they would offer something a little bit better until I eventually came down. And so I was very honored to go.
Yeah.
But I also recognized that I was kind of the first wave of cheap labor, right? That the model was different, that Ivani Moore was gone, Ted Field was gone, Rafe Mayer was gone. All these guys were gone, and they were being replaced with guys like me coming out of Kamloops. And I was honest with myself about it. Yes, it's because I've had some good stuff, but it's also because I'm cheap.
Yeah, and do you think that because you're being honest? Well, I'm not honest, but being forthright with me about what the state of the business is, that prevents you, say, from being in the business today?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When I got let go by NW, at first I kept my mouth shut.
Right.
And as sort of time wore on, my own personal sort of financial situation wore on, and you start learning things after the fact about sort of when, timelines and things like that, when things were going on, or you see the direction that the newsroom is going and that kind of thing. You know, I got angry, and I made the big mistake, the mistake that they were, that I'd always been warned about social media and whatnot. Yeah. And I started to speak my mind, and I was kind of, and it wasn't without reflecting first, but I kind of felt like, I'd been tossed out, right? Like, yeah. I'd brought the station a lot of good stuff for, 3.5 years, the bulk of their bigger scoops, and then I was sort of tossed out and forgotten, right? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I mean, I caved to anger, and I did myself in, right? Yeah. I got mad, and I started speaking out, and there was a lot of things about the business that, because I'm so passionate about it too, right?
Yeah.
Things that, my case aside, that bothered me about, like, the direction of news and sort of the undoing of such a great newsroom, which, that had started long before I got there and, continues, right? But, yeah, I mean, when there's one thing that media doesn't do, and that is air dirty laundry. You don't pick on the competition, because the sort of mutually assured destruction is in that they know your dirty laundry too.
Yeah.
And the sad reality is that everybody's guilty of a lot of the same crimes, and so you do blacklist yourself if you speak out. And I'm not the first guy that's done it either. There's a lot of really good former journalists out there who are now doing other things, in some cases working for the enemy.
Yeah.
The perceived the communications business, or the spin meisters and whatnot. A lot of them are they're former reporters, right?
Yeah. Do you think, when they do these polls, and they do these in the United States, and I think they do them in this country too, about occupations that people trust, or people in occupations
right.
that they trust, and usually lawyers and politicians are near the bottom, and then lately journalists have appeared
they're
there.
They're even lower, yeah.
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 Do you think that's, that's not a reflection, say, on the journalist per se, it's the as you said,
I think it's the industry.
Yeah, the model and the sort of business part of it that's
yeah. I will couch it with this. I would say that in Canada we do have a better media than they do in the United States in some respects, but we're not far behind them, right? I mean, the business model, the United States kind of, you know, they're the sort of the leader in trends in capitalism, and you know, and so a lot of Canadian corporations that own you know, media entities, they kind of are, they're going the same, they're following a lot of the same paths, right?
Yeah.
They're going down a lot of the same roads. A lot of especially talk radio, I mean, it's completely opinion driven, right? And they've kind of got this facade of providing news, but let's be honest, they're providing a product to their demographic, right? When the phone lines light up at CKNW, when everybody's passionate about a topic, what I learned through my time there is that it's not always a good weather vane of what public opinion is actually doing. It's a good weather vane of what males between the ages of 30 and 55 are thinking, who have a certain income bracket, NW's target audience, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a good example, Occupy, right?
Yeah.
So one of the funniest things about Occupy is while everybody was camped out on the outside of the art gallery there, he used to kind of give me a good idea of who NW's audience was by the kinds of calls that they would get, because they would get calls, people angry at the protesters for ripping up the lawn.
Yeah.
Well, this tells me that these are people who live out in the valley, right, who don't actually make it into town very often, because there hadn't been a lawn at the art gallery in a couple of years, right? Since before the Olympics, right. Well before the Olympics, there hadn't even been grass there. And you would know that if you spent any time downtown. Or say outrage about bike lanes, right?
Yeah.
NW went really hard on criticizing Vision Vancouver. And I think they did it because they had a belief that this was, there was an internal belief that this was a hot topic. People were really riled up. They got a huge listener response, right? They would do something on bike lines. Phone lines would light up solid. People would be emailing like crazy. But then the election comes along, and we find out, you know, Vision just stomps all over the NPA. And I think what that tells you is that a lot of their, well, and I guess what you have to remember is that those kinds of calls and that kind of listener response is only, it only tells you what the public opinion is of that station's target audience, because a lot of people who actually lived in Vancouver, you know, other than some of the businesses that were directly affected negatively, didn't have much of an opinion or had a positive opinion on sort of the direction that the city had gone with bike lanes and whatnot in town. And a lot of the people who are whining had kind of been fed a steady diet of this is the green agenda, and, you know, I don't want to say propaganda. It's not quite like that. They kind of, you know, they latch onto something based on listener response, right? Mm-hmm. And but it does kind of tend to be a sort of a circle of confirmation bias, right? People are tuning in to hear their own opinions. You know, it's what's become so popular in the States. Fox News has the entire conservative audience locked up. A lot of the middle ground people are split between all the other networks, and then the extreme liberals go to MSNBC, and then Fox can claim that they're number one because they've got the most in most of one constituency in one place. It's kind of like that in Canadian talk radio now, right? Everybody's got a target audience that they placate to.
You've demonstrated in the time that we've been chatting just how passionate you are about journalism.
Yeah.
But the experience of the last couple of years, that would leave one cynical, say. Are you cynical? Are you bitter?
It's a battle.
Yeah.
I'll be honest, it's a battle. But here's the thing, if somebody offered, I would take it up again in a heartbeat. It's really bizarre. Like, it's been hard for me to sit out on things like, you know, provincial politics and everything that's happening in provincial politics. It's been hard to sit on the sidelines and just and watch, right? It was hard to sit out Occupy. And that was happening amidst a civic election, right?
Yeah.
It's been hard to sit on the sidelines, and I think I would jump in there because I feel like it is the only thing that I know how to do, right? And I think a lot of, I think at the end of the day too, though, you want to go in and you want to do your little part to kind of, to do what you all these things that you think are wrong with the business, right? I think a lot of people that really love their job will acknowledge that there's a lot of crappy things about their job too, right? But they kind of want to be there to do their own little part, to pitch in, and to do the right thing, right? And I think that's what drives a lot of journalists, right? Because they really believe in it, because it certainly doesn't bring you big money, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think a lot of them are there for the right reasons, but they're caught in a system that right now is going through massive change, and that's where the hardship lies right now. But you know, I think eventually the dust will settle. I just hope that it happens during my lifetime.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you're someone that I've admired a great deal over the years, listening to you, seeing you on Twitter and the sort, and I'm pleased that a lot of people think the same way, not just mm-hmm. me. Best of luck, and I really appreciate you coming
Thank
in
you
to
very
do
much.
This.
Thank you.
Brett Meyer joined me live and in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plato.